All right, what's up, and welcome back for another episode of Cognizant and Cognizance, the podcast born out of recognizing the importance of the second stage of the mastery process, conscious incompetence. This is your host, Jim Perro, speaking, and every week I add a new chapter onto the anthological discussion on life, taking action, and the value of conscious thought. Join me and the occasional guest for a head-in-the-clouds perspective on how to stay grounded and win in all that you do. Enjoy! Welcome back. Here we are, another week of Cognizant and Cognizance.
You did.
Enjoying a nice, tasty little, and not a tasty beverage, but a beverage nonetheless. Sitting here with my good buddy, Kyle Crawford. Been a while since I've had you on, buddy. It's been like...
Probably about eight, nine months. I think we did one last fall.
At least six months. At least 6 months. Yep. So, no, yeah, it was in 2018. So, welcome back.
First one since we've been roommates.
This is true. So we are sitting here enjoying a beverage that was in the fridge, we'll classify it. Somebody at one of the two fantasy drafts I had in the place this weekend decided to leave some Michelob Ultras behind. So whoever you are in my friend group that's like on a diet or something... Not criticizing you. Do what you gotta do, but I'm sure there are other places you could cut your calories other than beer.
And one of the subscribers, if you are, for some reason, by chance, a representative of Michelob Ultra, we are looking for a sponsor at some point.
Yeah, so. Just, you know, we are drinking your beer. We're drinking your beer. We don't like it, but we're drinking it. So. Anyways...
I need a coaster.
So this is a big week in the end of the summer here as the summer's winding down.
Hold on a second.
Hey, settle down over there. Lay down. Sorry. The dog is not very happy that he's in his crate.
How long you had him?
The dog, it's been like 2 months.
I think it's about six weeks. Mid-July.
Yeah, he's about 18 weeks old now. Cool. So he's actually huge compared to when I picked him up. Yeah. So yeah, this is a huge week in the end of the summer. This is when all the fantasy football drafts start going off. And I've had two out of the three that I'm in this year. I may even join a fourth before the month is out. Who the fuck
knows?
That's bold. It's a lot, man. It's a lot. But it keeps me off the streets and off drugs, so to speak. depending on who you ask, anyway.
We'll get into that later.
Yeah, we'll get into that at another time. But so yeah, busy stuff going on. Very important shit. So learning a lot about these players, a lot of preseason injuries, which is why it's always interesting when we draft early in the preseason. For if you're a fantasy football fan, then you know exactly what I mean. If you're not, then you're slacking. Millions of people play this, so come on. Anyway, back to the important shit. Something actually very interesting and. Craw, I'm about to teach you this as well.
Please do.
It's quite relevant to what Mr. Crawford and I will be talking about this evening. Something I learned this week is about something called cheirophobia. And
what?
This is, cheirophobia. Cheirophobia. And cheirophobia is the irrational fear of having fun or being happy. So, based on that, I mean, I know a shit ton of people that probably have this particular phobia. I imagine that you do too. Maybe it's a subconscious thing. Maybe it's just like an intentional, maybe it's an intentional defense mechanism to avoid looking like they're having too much fun. Whatever it is, there's a lot of miserable people out there in this world. And, I don't really understand it. So we'll come back to cheirophobia momentarily. This is going to be the last Daily Stoic entry that I read for the month of August. And it kind of goes along with cherophobia, not wanting yourself to have fun or not wanting other people to have fun. So today was from Seneca's Moral Letters. This is, again, August is the month of pragmatism. That's the theme for this month. Today's the 28th. So, yeah, we won't have another pragmatism entry.
See, Jim, I think you and I both know that, I mean, obviously I'm better looking, but I think you might have a slight intelligent advantage. Be sure with the audience who might not be as intelligent as you and I what pragmatism means.
Pragmatism is just practicality. It's the blend of rational thought and how you weigh your priorities. Kind of it's fuel for decision making is, I guess, the best way to put it. It's the easiest way to make a decision that applies directly to your rational train of thought. So for today we have the entry called The Opulent Stoic, and so I will get right into it. The founder of the universe, who assigned to us the laws of life, provided that we should live well, but not in luxury. Everything needed for our well-being is right before us, whereas what luxury requires is gathered by many miseries and anxieties. Let us use this gift of nature and count it among the greatest things. Excuse me. So even in his own time, Seneca was criticized for preaching Stoic virtues while accumulating one of the largest fortunes in Rome. Seneca was so rich that some historians speculate the major loans he made to the inhabitants of what is now Britain caused what became a horrifically brutal uprising there. Excuse me. His critics' derisive nickname for him was the Opulent Stoic. Opulent being wealthy, living a life of luxury, and just rich as hell, basically. So Seneca's response to this criticism is pretty simple. He might have wealth, but he didn't need it. He wasn't dependent on it or addicted to gathering it, nor, despite his large bank account, was he considered to be anything close to Rome's most lavish spenders and pleasure hunters. Whether his rationalization was true or not, and whether he was a tad hypocritical or not, his is a decent prescription for navigating today's materialistic and wealth-driven society. This is the pragmatic instead of moralistic approach to wealth. We can still live well without becoming slaves to our luxury, and we don't need to make decisions that force us to continue working and working and working and drifting further from study and contemplation in order to get more money to pay for things we don't need. There's no rule that says financial success must mean that you live beyond your means. And just remember, humans can be very happy with very little. Doesn't really apply to you or I, because I can comfortably say that neither of us are anywhere near opulent at this point in our lives. The relevant piece comes in the simplicity of living that you can actually subsist on, you know? They called him the Opulent Stoic because it was really the only criticism they had. It was the only ammunition they had. Mm-hmm. He was right about so many things, and quiet. Sorry. He was right about so many things, and he shared so much applicable wisdom with so many people that his critics had to find something to rip on him for, right?
Mm-hmm. They were just like haters, though?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think it was. It was people who maybe didn't have the as we would say, maybe they racked the discipline to live the way that Seneca did. You know, these are people that weren't living up to the pinnacle of their virtuous potential, which is what he was always preaching. And these are people that basically, they found it within themselves, you know what, we're going to criticize him for having some money in the bank. So, you know, and I think a lot of times, you probably see this all over the internet. You've ever interacted with someone on the internet, you get, well, what about this? Like, somebody does something good, and there's an instant tendency, I think, in today's culture to bring up, well, what about that time they said this that I don't agree with, right? It just goes to show that's not a new thing. People have been pieces of annoying garbage since the Roman Empire was at its height, right?
Was this guy, like, empowering other people to, like, do well, though?
Yeah, he was spreading wisdom on how he realized his true human potential and how he thought he was able to be a more virtuous and a better human being. He was sharing wisdom with other people. Mm-hmm. And if I'm getting this correct, it was either Seneca or Epictetus who and there was a few other guys that did this actually, would intentionally dress down and try to look more plain.
Mm-hmm.
They intentionally did it because they didn't give a shit about the clothing.
Yeah.
And their richer friends would then make fun of them for it. Because, mm-hmm. Why are you wearing fucking commoner clothes? And like, dude, I don't give a shit about that. And you really shouldn't either. Teaching people kind of how to stay centered and figure this out.
Yeah.
And I think there's kind of a modern parallel here between like the modern day philosophizers, right? Like mm-hmm. the Gary V's of the world.
Yeah. There's a lot of similarities in, you know, we'll say back then to what is now present day. And I think it's just obviously it's a different time and people have always, you know, promoted, you know, wealth and success or whatever, you know, the goals and ambitions.
Gather the grains.
Yeah, whatever they want to do. But at the same time, like even back then, dude, you're still going to have haters.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in the Roman Empire, they had haters. Like, dude, Jesus had freaking haters. Like,
yeah, no shit.
You know, they're like, yeah, a ton of people in, you know, people who have accomplished a lot in their lives, they always had haters.
Yeah. That's where I think Gary Vee or even my personal favorite, Ryan Holiday, the guy who writes the Daily Stoic,
yeah.
Which I pre-ordered his book, by the way. The name is escaping me. I'll find it before the end of the
Shout out Ryan Holiday.
Shout out Ryan Holiday for being the fucking man. Let me just Google this real quick. Ryan Holiday books. But anyway, so I think that's the criticism of not just those two, but like anybody that has wealth and is providing like a prescription for other people on how to live well. That's their criticism. Is, well, yeah, obviously you're going to tell me what to do because you don't have to worry about money, right? Money's not a concern for you. So of course you have all this time to, you know, to focus on other shit and stay disciplined. There's no pressure on you, right? So, stupid thing. So for you, because obviously we listen to some of the very same you know, people for inspiration or motivation. For you, how do you reconcile the difference between what they have versus the audience that they're speaking to?
I think you have to understand that all of those people were once where you are or, you know, where not where they were once. So I think they understand that they want to inspire other people to, you know, get where they've gotten. I think a lot of people find value in that, where a lot of people want to have all these things and they want to have the success that maybe some of these influencers are having. And I think they, you know, some of them like Gary Vee or this guy, for example, they all understand that they were once, you know, they didn't have anything. They came from nothing. And I think that's where a lot of the great inspirational people and why a lot of people are drawn to those big influencers, I think they are very relatable and they come from a position of, dude, like I have nothing. Like I'm a huge Grant Cardone. I'm a huge fan of him. He started his journey, we'll say, quote unquote, when he was 25, 26 years old, like just where we are. He's in car sales. He's grinding out, working all this time and all these overtime.
So miserable.
Yeah, horrible, horrible. But understand, like, you know, maybe some people listening to this or some people might not want the life that he has or might not be willing to go through the things that he did. But I think a lot of people, especially in social media, they see all these things and all this success, and all this luxury, and they want it.
Yeah.
But that's just the extra. That's just you know, what's on the surface. They don't go. That's very superficial. They don't go underneath and see all the work, everything that
Ronnie
they had.
Coleman, baby. Everybody want to be the best, but nobody want to put in the work.
Yeah,
man.
Nobody wants to. Everybody want to be strong.
Yeah,
but nobody wants to lift no heavy ass weights, man.
Nobody wants to lift no heavy ass weights. Absolutely, dude. That's what hits it for me too, is especially like listening to like Gary Vee's story, where like just growing up as a first generation American and then helping his parents build the business, putting in the long ass fucking hours.
And all of his friends were chirping.
And all of his friends are like, you fucking loser,
yeah,
you're wearing like a homemade Jets jersey, you're a loser.
Because he was in his early 30s, still working at his parents' store.
Yeah,
and all of his
posting
friends,
like wine reviews online.
Yeah, so because he lived in New Jersey, and all of his friends had like they're in like New York City, and they had like, you know, executive jobs, and they're like, you know, driving these cars and this and that, and like he's grinding it out at his parents' liquor store.
Yeah, but now who's winning, dude?
And it's funny because like you look at kind of where everybody is, and then like, okay, some people kind of start off, you know, rather quickly. And then, like, Gary Vee always preaches, like, dude, build that base, build the foundation. So you're just building, 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 and then over time, you can kind of surpass that. But it really depends on what your priorities are, what you want in life, and I think you really need to look inside yourself, what's important to you, and, you know, your priorities, and I think that's something that we're going to get into.
Absolutely. Dude, I just quick side note on Gary Vee. I heard something that was really cool the other day. You know how he always does, like, those behind-the-scenes videos?
I like that, yeah.
Where he's, like, talking at some kind of a conference or something?
Yep.
Excuse me.
You gotta get that together.
What?
Your digestive system, whatever.
I'm chugging this beer because it's gross, dude.
It's round one. Mm-hmm. I think we're almost on to round two.
Yeah, we are. But so the story about Gary Vee was how he was manually, and in the time before Amazon really blew up, mm-hmm. And before, like, the advent of online retail really came to fruition, Gary Vee was out, like, doing shit for winelibrary.com, where, like, people would go on there and put wine orders or liquor orders in their cart and then not finish them, and he would block out time during his day to manually go in and call people with open carts and be like, hey, just so you know, you forgot to check this out. Whereas now, like, he was doing that shit in, like, the early 2000s, like 2002, 2005.
Yeah.
He's calling people manually, like, hey, this is Gary Vaynerchuk with Wine Library. Like, just wanted to let you know, I was looking through some things, and it looks like you forgot to check this out. If you check out with me over the phone right now, I'll give you an extra 10% off or some shit. Just call people and manually do that. Whereas now, Amazon's got the automated emails, all these other, like, when I get my fucking...
I have 15 things in my car right now. You know how many freaking emails that I get?
Yeah, exactly. And
hey, Kyle, things about to expire. They're creating some urgency.
This deal's going to expire, but Gary Vee's out here hand-calling people 15 years
ago. A lot of people are afraid to do that.
Yeah. Just pick up the phone, man. Anyway. I think... The criticism of, well, you're a rich person, I think it falls, today's day and age, I think that falls flat on its face, because there's a really, really big difference today, whereas back then, in the Roman times, if you were poor, you were going to die at the end of the week,
I don't mean to laugh.
Well, I'm grossly dramatizing that, but it's kind of true.
Yeah.
If you were a poor person in Rome, you were going to die at the end of the week.
Yeah.
And if you were a rich person in Rome, like, you haven't seen the outside of your palace in fucking months. You've just been sitting on your bed eating grapes, right? Whereas if you're poor now, comparatively, like, you're alive, you're living, it's not fun, and you should never have to be stuck there, but you're alive, right? You're not in danger of dying from diarrhea because you drank shitty water.
Yeah, and I think that's where, like, gratitude comes into effect, because I think a lot of people don't like rich people. They're very envious or they're jealous, and I think that comes from a lack of appreciatism and gratitude for what you have, because I think if you're feeling that, you're living, you're trying, you know, you're expecting to have this certain lifestyle. If you don't have it, you're gonna feel unfulfilled.
Yeah.
But I think if you can just be grateful and be appreciative of what you have, like, one, if you're listening to this, I'm assuming you live in America. I think that's enough.
I have a lot of listeners in Sweden.
Sweden,
a lot of listeners.
Great country. Love Sweden. Play hockey. Play hockey up there?
I imagine. I have some people in Africa, like Nigeria.
Yeah.
I was looking at the analytics the other day. I got Europe, Africa, U.S., and Australia.
Yeah, and I feel like, for me personally, like, I don't really get, like, too down. And when I do, I think one of the things that I really focus on is the gratitude. And one, I have a bed to sleep in, one, I have a house over the head. You know, unfortunately, I have you as a roommate, but, you know, I have food on the table. And I think that's, if you can, you know, grasp all that, I think you just put things into a different perspective.
That's the essence of what the entry for today was it's not about being rich or how much money you can gather. It's about how well are you living with the money that you have. Mm-hmm. And I think the disconnect and why that criticism of people falls flat is, well, what you say isn't valid because you're a rich person. Mm-hmm. The rich people now still have to fucking work.
They're
like
grinding.
Gary Vee is constantly grinding. And I know a lot of people that have more money than I do, but they're not rich. They're not living extravagantly. When they take a business trip for work, they're fucking sitting coach. Mm-hmm. You know, my boss sits coach when she flies for business, yeah. and she makes fucking triple what I make at least.
Yeah.
But so I think the difference is between living well and living extravagant. You know,
yeah.
living an extravagant, yes. crazy lifestyle.
There's levels.
Absolutely. And the, I guess the this is kind of a rhetorical question, but like, where's that? Where's the line? You know, where's the line between being, you know, living well and living extravagantly? Where's that cutoff, right? Like, is there, who on social media would you, do you follow, mm-hmm. other than Dan Bilzerian, which is the obvious answer?
That was one of the first.
Would you say is living extravagantly based on their social media? Let's not get into whether they really are, like, they could be very well broke behind the scenes, but who on social media do you follow that you'd say is living extravagantly?
Well, so there's this one dude, and he actually works for Grant, Ryan Secco. So he's his pilot.
You were telling me
and
about
he's the
guy.
He's the manager, he's the portfolio manager of Cardone Capital, which is his real estate fund.
Where was he before Cardone Capital? Somewhere crazy.
No, well, he started off flying his plane, and in the background, he was always just studying Grant, wanted to be around him. So he went into the Air Force. He was a pilot, and the guy's been kind of grinding since day one. And then he's been into real estate, and then he's like, "Yo, dude, I want to be around. I'm in real estate. I got a ton of properties. I want to be around Grant. I'm a pilot. Like, dude, I'll come work for you. I'll fly your plane for you." And all that, and they started connecting. But this guy's traveling all over the world. He's, you know, driving these cars. He's with all these fucking girls. And, you know, I think that as guys, that's kind of the life that we see and we kind of envy sometimes. Yeah. And, you know, at the same time, we only see what's out there on social media and we don't see the grind. We don't see the work ethic. We see the results.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that you see, whether it's money, every physical thing, I feel like that you see in life, that's a result.
Yeah. It's a result of a lot of focus, and it's a result of a lot of effective priorities.
In order to get that result, you gotta pay the cost. If you want something, you have to pay the cost. There's a cost to it. Ronnie Coleman, like if you want that body, like Phil Heath, if you want
have you seen his documentary?
Unbelievable.
He can't walk now.
I know, but I'm saying like, that's also a cost.
That's one of the
costs. You want to be a champion, you want to get that big, or you want to accomplish whatever it is. There's a cost.
There's
a cost to whatever you want. And to answer your question is, where's the line between living well and living extravagantly? I think it depends on the person. Like my mother, for example. She always lived like well below her means. She's, you know, lower middle class. Like she was just fine, like living a house in the suburbs, white picket fence, like, you know, the typical average American. And she's fine with that. She lives well in her eyes. Me growing up, I'm like, yeah, that's what I experienced. But like, I don't want that for myself. I want so much more. So we have a different perspective on what living well is, where she would think that, you know, going out to dinner and doing all these, you know, fancy things or driving like a nice car, that would be living extravagantly. Where for me, I think living extravagantly is like going on vacation whenever you want, like having the planes, having the car, like doing all, like going to, I would love to have like season tickets to the Dallas Cowboys or going to any sporting event that I want. That would be living extravagantly for me. So I think it really depends on the person.
Yeah. I think the line comes for me.
Hey!
Knock it off, Apollo. You adorable little bastard.
He is adorable.
I know, right?
I love him.
Stop. I think the line comes for me when you no longer have to worry about if you can do something or not. Once you no longer have to worry, I'd say you've probably transcended your living well, and you've most likely reached extravagancy. Hmm. When you no longer have to decide, like, do I want to go on vacation for 10 days or 8 days? You know, you can just, I'm going for a month. Mm-hmm. Fuck it. And nothing, you know, nothing changes. You come back and nothing changes at all. Whereas if I went on vacation for a month as it sits right now, sure, I'd be getting paid, but I'm going to come back and I'm going to be fucking buried, yeah. right? My boss is going to fucking want to shoot me in the face. And like, my life would be drastically altered when I returned from a month of vacation, yep. because I would have so much to do. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, if you're living truly extravagantly, you never had anything to do in the first place. You can just travel for a month.
So you think living well, I think it really comes down to time. So living well I think you have a good amount of time to do the things that you want. I think living extravagantly
is...
You have all the time in the world. And I think it comes down to, like, for example, I use my boss and my mentor, Isaiah, where he's... I would say he's independently wealthy. He's got a great business. He has, you know, money.
I'm going to get the round two here.
And he can do... he's in a position where he can do what he wants. But is he living extravagantly? I would say no, because he's still running a company. It's a startup. He's not in a position where he could take, you know, 8-10 days off whenever he wants to go and travel or do these things. as he throws his back out like he did. Where in, because he took that time off in early July to go on vacation with his family. And he came back and, yeah, I mean, the company was running fine, but at the same time, like, he's still working from his cruise ship. He's nervous as shit. He, you know, is on his laptop. He's sitting on every conference call. He's dialing in, and he's still trying to run his business. Where I think if he got to the point where, you know, he were to outside hire a CEO to come in and take his job and not have to operate the business day to day, and he would just have whatever money's coming in from, you know, the cash flow coming in from our company, and he can live off of that. Now he has more time to do what he wants. I think for me personally, that's where you can live extravagantly, when you don't have, to like really report.
Nothing's monopolizing your time.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And so I guess
that's the only, if you want to live extravagantly, the only way to do it. Cheers. Now we got
round two.
Now we got the river water, the true Genesee Light.
Shout out Genesee, man.
Shout out, right? It's fucking delicious.
Rock City. Rock Vegas. I love when people call it that.
Rock Vegas. But I think to get to that extravagant lifestyle, the most important thing is, and this, I think this is something that I don't give a shit who they are, unless somebody hit the lottery and then made excellent investments, right?
Yeah, that's the key. That's
we are excluding any inheritance or lottery winners here. Something common between all of the most successful people in the world is that they are purpose or goal oriented. To get to that extravagant lifestyle, I don't want to say it's impossible, because I'm sure some asshole out there has done it, just being all over the place and then somehow making it to be successful. But I'd say more often than not, the most successful people in the world have a sense of purpose and a direction in mind that they want to take things. They, you know, they have that cause that they're centered around. They have the goal that they need to reach before they really start getting into any kind of fucking extracurricular shit.
And I love this. One of the things that Andrew Carnegie said is, you have one, it's the purpose. That was number one, is principles. And the second one is a burning desire.
Yeah. You gotta want it, dude. You gotta want it enough so that it's not hard to sacrifice other things.
Yeah.
And so this kind of goes back to that question that I asked you earlier, was about FOMO versus FOE, right? Fear of missing out versus fear of enjoying yourself. Do you let the chair phobia set in? Do you get paranoid when you're out having fun, or do you get paranoid when you're not having fun that you should be having fun, right?
I think it's a little bit of both to kind of start this off. If I think when I am out having fun and I have that fear of missing out, right? And then we go to do something, and then when I'm actually doing that, I don't think about anything. I'm living in the moment and enjoying my time.
Mm. So which one of those two things would you say is more paralyzing, and which one's more motivating? Would you rather be dedicated to your cause? And so, like, here's a scenario for you. You can only, for the rest of your life, exist in one of these mental states. You can either constantly be dedicated to your cause, see your friends having fun without you, and have it distract you. Or would you rather feel bad about yourself when you're out having fun because you're not working on your cause or your goal right that second? Which one would you rather have?
Dude, that's a tough question.
That's a very tough question.
And I mean,
obviously, happy medium is the best option.
You stumped me when we first had it.
There are no happy mediums here. You can have situation A, where you're constantly distracted from your goal because you're not having any fun, or situation B, where you're not working on your goal as much as you need to be, and it's distracting you from having fun.
So I'll answer this in the the sense that I know what I should be doing, in the fact that I'm going to, you know, if I want to be where I want to be in the next 10 to 20 years, I should be in the position where I am focused and not have that fear of missing out, because thinking about the future, I don't want to be missing out on all the things that I could be doing in the future. I don't want my son or my daughter, you know, or my wife in the future to have the fear, be missing out on all the things that they would like to do in their lives. So I feel like it's important right now to, you know, put myself in a position where, yeah, I'm going to be missing out on some of the things now, but later I'm going to be able to do whatever it is that I want to do.
So let me ask you this. Which one do you think is more, taking out your personal preference, which one do you think has a bigger negative effect on your short-term mental health in terms of focus and happiness? Which one do you think is more, robs you of more short-term happiness, FOMO or FOE?
FOE, because I think if you have the fear of missing out now, like, this party is going to be sweet this weekend, whatever. I don't want to miss out on that because it's short term. It's going to happen this weekend or within the next couple of days. So I'm going to go do that. I'm going to enjoy it because I don't want to come the next week when everybody's talking about it, and then I'm going to miss out on the thing that happened this last weekend because I want to fit in, or I want to be a part of it now because I'm using my short term thinking and not thinking about the long term.
So that's your FOMO.
Yes.
So let me give you a FOE situation.
Okay.
FOMO is...
You're just going to hammer me the whole time.
No, I'm not. I just want to hear where you're at.
Okay.
Because I agree with you, but I'm like 51-49 on the FOMO versus FOE.
You just told me you can't paralyzed. Be split down the... You can't be half-half.
I'm in the FOMO camp.
No, you're 51-49.
I think that's more paralyzing.
Jesus.
But hear me out here.
Okay.
Here, I like to play devil's advocate, which is why women hate my guts.
Oh, yeah.
So FOMO, I agree, is more damaging because it's robbing you of discipline. It's the constantly thinking about what your friends are up to and, ah, shit, I wish I could be there, is taking you...
It's an external...
Yeah, if you have the chance to even engage with the fear of missing out, then you're not focused on the task at hand that's causing you to miss out, which is only going to further prolong the amount of times that you have to miss out on things. Whereas if you were to just buckle down and get it done, you would be able to go out and do shit the next time instead of having to also sacrifice the next time. But I think, depending on what the situation is that you're either missing out on or enjoying.
Yeah.
Like, if, let's say I was in Boston, like I was 2 weeks ago, I was in Boston for work.
Yeah.
The next day when I was supposed to leave, there was a Red Sox game that I really, really, really wanted to see. Right? Now imagine this, instead of coming back and continuing to work for the rest of the day, excuse me, imagine I sacrifice that, stay in Boston for another day on my own dime, and go see the Red Sox game.
Yeah.
I'm sacrificing my work priorities by staying in Boston. I wouldn't be able to enjoy the Red Sox game because I would know exactly what was going to be waiting for me when I got home. I would have a big shit steamer on, like, waiting in my inbox, like, hey, why aren't you here? Like, what's good?
Yeah.
Where the fuck are you?
Yeah.
And so that is robbing my immediate happiness. I've skipped out on my responsibilities to do something, but the moral implications of skipping out on that thing to go enjoy myself is now robbing me of the happiness that I sought by skipping out on my responsibilities.
It's like the Jerry Seinfeld bit of there's present you, or there's day Jerry, there's night Jerry, and morning Jerry.
Yeah.
So day Jerry has his day job. Night Jerry is like, hey man, let's have some fun. Let's go out to the bar. Let's do this. And then that always punishes Morning Jerry.
Yeah, Morning Jerry gets the shit end of the stick every
and
time.
And so Night Jerry's the
Morning
one that's living
Jim
it up.
Always gets the shit end of the stick.
And he goes, the only way for Morning Guy to get a hand up is to oversleep his alarm so Day Jerry gets screwed and then Night Jerry can't go out anymore.
Yeah, it's true. Somebody's always getting the shit end of the stick in the tricameral division of your consciousness. Someone's always getting the shit end of the stick. So, who do you like fucking over most? Do you like fucking over Day Kyle, Night Kyle, or Morning Kyle? Who's your...
My Day Kyle's fine.
Who do you like fucking over the least, then, I should say? Who do you hate when they have to take a hit? You know? Would you rather have
Night Kyle? If Night Kyle gets like hit, dude, it sucks.
You can't go out. You can't watch the game. You can't go to the gym that night.
Morning Kyle is a fucking beast, dude. I can go out whatever at night, and then in the morning I wake up and I'll get through it. Like I'm fucking like Morning Kyle's pretty tough.
That must be
Day Kyle gets through it, right? You get some water in you, get some coffee, whatever, and then Night Kyle. And then by the time like Night Kyle, you know, he'll sleep sometimes. And then, you know, if he, you know, decides to go out, whatever, I think. But, you know, for me, recently, like, you know, moving into the city, being, you know, downtown, the hustle and bustle, like, I like that, you know, going out, having fun, interacting with people. And, you know, I'm super extroverted, so I love that interaction with other people.
It's the time.
And that's what brings me a lot of pleasure is interacting with people. So I think if I'm deprived of that, it brings me down.
Yeah. I think it brings me down too. Morning gym is the worst. Yeah. He's the worst.
Oh,
gym,
I'm aware.
Bro, I wake up at 5:45 this morning, take this little shithead out.
Yep. What do you call him? The shitbird?
He's a shitbird. He's a shitbird. Constantly flapping over my shoulder and just shitting all over me.
Can we look up that definition?
Definition of a shitbird?
What the hell is a shitbird, dude?
It's from,
you're making up words over here.
Nah, it's from fucking Trailer Park Boys.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Shitbird.
Shitbird.
Yeah. An objectionable, despicable person. Yeah, this dog is an objectionable, despicable puppy. And he's a child. Yeah, I'm talking about you. I know you're looking over here, buddy. But so I wake up and I take him out this morning, as is my custom. Take him out, let him use the bathroom, let him run around for like 5 minutes. Come back in. Excuse me. Put him back in his crate, go back to sleep for another hour and a half. Mm-hmm. I get up to get him his breakfast at 7:15, right?
Yeah.
So I feed him. I put him back in his crate because I'm like walking around and doing shit, make the coffee, do some shit in my room, and then I fell back asleep until 10:30. Like, I didn't even drink last night. You know? Didn't even drink last night. It just Morning Jim decided, you know what? I've already done my good deed for the day. I don't really care about Day Jim. Day Jim can get fucked. Mm-hmm. He's going to get a nice hour and a half late start on his work.
Sure.
Because I don't really feel like it. Yeah. Like, Day Jim, I think, gets the short end of the stick almost all the time.
Yeah.
Because Morning Jim's a dick. Mm-hmm. Morning Jim has no problem getting out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
Morning Jim just gets back into bed.
Yeah.
That's his issue.
Yep.
Get out of bed. That is the most challenging part about working at home, I think, is the ability to just say, nope.
Dude, I couldn't do it. I physically could not do it. Like, with all due respect, like, I mean, I say that too much. With all due respect, I'm not disrespecting you in any way.
You're a dick.
It's something all about me. But I have discipline in some areas, but not all areas, where something like that, especially a work situation, I don't believe that I could work from home simply for that reason.
Yeah.
So if I know I have to be somewhere or somebody's going to be on my ass, if I'm not there, I'm more likely to go there.
It's true. I have no pressure.
No.
I have no pressure even when I'm at work.
Well, here's the other thing. All right. So for example, you were in until 10:30. Okay. You just condense your day down. So like 10:30, you work till 6:30. I think you went to the gym at 6. You were probably work until 5:45.
I made my last dial at 4:50, and then just
Like take an hour for lunch. Like you probably make some food. You come down here. You're still working, so you're not taking that hour. So you have a solid
sit there for an hour.
I know, but 11:30, 12:30, 1:32, 33, 34, 35, 30. You're still getting a solid 7 hours of work done.
Right.
You don't have the distractions like I do in my office where I got people running around. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to walk downstairs to go to the bathroom. Like your bathroom's right there. You got to go get a water. Everything's right here. You know, the amount of time that I waste during the day just doing little shit. I save
by having it all in a 10-foot radius.
Yep.
No, oh, dude, I take pisses while I'm on the phone all the time.
Yeah.
I'll just mute it.
Yep.
Flush, unmute. Like, it saves a lot of time.
Yeah.
It saves way more time than you'd think.
Yep.
Right? But, like, it gets to the point where, you know what? Actually, I guess I shouldn't say that then, because I guess day gym doesn't really have it so bad.
No.
Now, if I had to go into the office every day, day gym would be a miserable person. Mm-hmm. He would be fucking miserable. But, lo and behold, every day when you get home from work by 5:15, 5:30, what am I doing? Watching fucking South Park. My laptop's closed, because I've gotten it all done.
Here's the other thing. As long as you're getting your shit done, dude, and I feel like a lot of times I've talked to, you know, my company about this, as far as, like, getting stuff done, do you think people would be as productive if they worked from home? I think it really depends on the person. I think it really depends on the person. Like, there are people in my job, we do have some people that are remote that work from home, and they get solid results. They're not great. They're not falling below that, but they're solid, about average result. Now, if you're working from home and you're having poor results, like that's a different conversation. Totally. But it really depends on the person in your situation.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I know this is that working remote, there is only one instance where I am under pressure, or I feel that I'm under pressure, and this is a self-imposed pressure. So my goal for this is obviously get fucking results, regardless of whether I'm working remotely or in an office, because I don't necessarily care to live extravagantly other than to travel when I feel like traveling. So you're a
big travel guy. Like,
I don't... A, I don't travel enough, and B, that's really the only goal of mine, is to be able to travel whenever I want for as long as I want and still get shit done.
Maybe I never traveled much as a kid, so like I don't know if I really like value that or like care to. I don't desire that as much as some people. I don't know.
It's a worthy endeavor in my eyes, because it's, you know, you got plenty of time, man. But that's my only goal, is to make sure that I'm able to function in a remote setting so that I don't need to use time off to travel, where I can work while I'm in another area of the U.S. or, heaven forbid, another country, and still keep the job, you know, still call some people. I don't give a shit. If I'm traveling, especially if I'm traveling by myself and I have no time limits that I have to set, like, I sacrifice fucking 3 or 4 hours at night where I have to call some people.
Yeah.
And it's 10 o'clock my time, but it's, you know, 3 in the afternoon here or 9 a.m. here, whatever time it might be. But that's my only goal, is that's why I just don't go to the office. My boss is like, you can come into the office whenever you want. If I need you here, I'd like you to be here, but you don't have to come in.
So we're talking about work. Can we transition into the FOMO and...
Yeah.
FOMO and what?
FOE. Fear of missing out versus fear of enjoying.
FOMO yourself. And FOE.
Which I'm putting a trademark on FOE. I thought of that today. You heard it here first.
All right, let's call the patent office tomorrow.
Yeah, call them up. FOE. Just about to throw hashtags.
Talk about it. Can we talk about it from a financial perspective? Because I think that's really important.
Yeah, I'm terrible at... I have no financial FOMO whatsoever, because I just spend money on whatever I feel like spending money on.
Yeah.
None. I believe that money is earned for it. It is designed to come in the door so that it can leave the door. Whether that's on fun or on investments or whatever you choose to allocate your resources for, resources and specifically money, I think, just from a philosophical standpoint, it was made to come in the door so that it could go out another door. I hate
that's the hoarding of money.
That's how people function in a capitalist, and not even capitalist, just a trade-based economy. It doesn't even have to be money, and it doesn't even have to be a capitalist system. But if you're on the barter system, if you have 75,000 pallets of paper, and everybody needs paper, but you never trade the paper with them for other stuff, the paper's worthless. You know, nobody can use the services or the goods that you're accumulating. So what's the point of hoarding it, right? You should be gathering the paper from your source to give it to the people that need the paper for other things.
There's no point in saving money just to save it.
No, save it for a purpose.
Save it for, you have to have a purpose. And I think that's where it comes, a purpose or desire for what it is that you
successful
want
people have a purpose. Even if the purpose is retirement, so be it. But, like, this is...
You gotta have your emergency funds and saving it for that, of course.
But I have no issue with Jeff Bezos acquiring the wealth that he's acquired. But what are you doing with it?
Dude, why does Amazon... I found this Amazon and... It's Amazon... Actually, no. Sorry. Berkshire Hathaway has... I sent you that Snapchat.
They own the warehouses that Amazon uses.
So, it's... They have 22 billion dollars
liquid.
They have the most of any
company. What are you doing with that?
Apple has 18 million. 18 million?
What are you?
No, sorry. 18 billion in cash.
What are you doing with that money? Like, what is it used for?
That's a great question, because obviously they're intelligent.
That's high level financial shit that I just would never even begin to comprehend.
What is their? Do they literally have so much money that they
don't know how to spend it?
They don't know what to do with it.
That's way beyond an emergency fund.
No, but for a big ass company like that, that's worth, what's Amazon worth trillions of dollars? Like, Apple's worth hundreds of $900 billion. Like, to have 20 or 18 billion dollars in cash, I think if you're looking at it from like a percentage, like me and you, for example, like, you should have X amount percentage in cash in your savings account for whatever 6 months. Like, the minimum should be like 6 months expenses in cash in savings.
Yeah.
So if anything were to happen, do you think that's kind of what Apple or Berkshire Hathaway is doing? Like, do you think
in case they start hemorrhaging
money, $22 billion in cash for like a 6 months, a year, a 2 year expense paid?
Like a contingency plan?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know, man.
I mean, think about it, dude. If your company's worth $900 billion and you have $20 billion in cash, like, that's probably financially smart. Like, let's have some, even if it's a small percentage of our company's net worth, set aside in cash.
Yeah, so I should.
It's a lot to us, but relative to the net worth of their company, it's not a lot.
Still crazy.
I think that still makes sense, though.
It's still crazy, though.
But I think it's
the sheer volume.
Well, dude, I think it's crazy because our brains and where we are in life cannot physically comprehend.
I can't fathom how large of a number
that is.
Yeah, I can't fathom that being a small amount of money. Ever. Don't care. I'm very comfortable in saying that I. Well, I mean, I guess not that I never will be, but I have no desire to be worth what's Jeff Bezos, $137 billion. I have no desire to be that rich. Ever.
That's so much responsibility.
That's too much money. That is entirely too much money for me personally, because I would start doing foolish things with that money. I would definitely be, I would honestly, like, I'd be buying my friends, like, fucking super yachts. We'd be racing that shit in the Atlantic Ocean.
Let's just go get two yachts and play.
Bro, I would 100, if I, okay, I vow this now currently.
All right.
If my net worth ever hits $1 billion, I am personally funding for all the squad.
Yeah.
a like around the world in 80 days situation.
Yes.
Like a race. No. Because
Craw Yacht Club 2031.
Yeah, that ass. But there's here's the thing though, there's no reason to have that much money as an individual. There's just no reason.
I mean, there are reasons, just none that
that I am morally okay with. Like, get your money, but do something with your money. Don't just sit there and hang on.
Well, I think that's like, the thing. Like, if you're a billionaire, dude, you don't just have $1 billion cash. Like, you're out, dude. It's doing shit.
Yeah,
it's funding companies. It's creating, I don't know, real estate, or creating, you know, charity for companies or hungry people.
I'd be curious to know how much of his net worth is actually cash on hand. I'd be curious. Because I bet it's a lot. It's a shit ton. Like, but
it comes down to your priorities, what's important to you.
Yeah. Hoarding money is not my priority. Therefore, I guess after all of that, I don't think I'll really
hoarding money's a habit, just as spending money's a habit.
I'll never have FOMO. I don't allow myself to have FOMO. Do I get FOE? All the time.
I think one of the
all things, the time, dude. Like all the time.
One of the things that, you know, I always think about, and I think a large reason of why I am who I am is because, like, my father died at a really young age. I think I had a lot of my family that passed away when I was little. Both my grandmother, both my grandfathers.
Everybody out here dying fucking young.
My dad and my Uncle Bernie lived with me when I was in...
For a short time.
Yeah, like early college. And I saw how short life is. And
it's not short enough, dude.
And I knew how important, like, enjoying life and having a good time and creating memories was. So I think that's the way I am financially, because I never want to be in a position where I'm going to miss out on a memory or an opportunity to have fun, because I always thought that was super important. I think that's partially why sometimes I'm financially irresponsible, because, you know, for example, I think we talked about the Park Ave thing. We went out,
man. Yeah,
we had a hell of a weekend and spent way too much money. Money, man. We should obviously have fun and spend money and put it aside, but spending way too much money, $400 or $500 in a span of 2 days.
Dude, I think honestly,
at the bars and, you know, whatever.
Almost that much on a Saturday because of your golf tournament.
To have fun. Yeah.
Like, that's gross. That's gross.
I mean, we had a fucking time.
But I look at my account on Monday, and I'm like, you're a gremlin. You're a filthy fucking animal. What's wrong with you?
And so, what part of that is like, yeah, you have fun in the moment, or you're thinking in the future, hey, I'm going to go have fun. And then in the moment, we're having fun. But then after the fun is over, now I'm like regretting that. And now I'm having now I'm having the fear of...
enjoying yourself.
Enjoying yourself. I had the... like, literally...
You're getting all cheraphobic, son.
Yeah.
Getting all cheraphobic.
So how do you balance that? I think that's the question. How do you kind of have... Where's the happy medium?
You just drink a White Claw, so there's no laws. Zero laws, including financial constants. They don't apply anymore when you start drinking White Claws, dude. Not a one.
It's like, I'll catch up next week.
I'll get them next week, exactly. Fuck yeah. Man.
I think we're coming up on round three.
Well, here, yeah, let's crack round three here. 1 second, and then we'll...
I love how your show's like split up into segments. Like, we do round one, the opener, round two.
This isn't a title fight though, so we're only gonna give you the first three rounds.
Yeah, we only have three rounds here, people. We're not getting too carried away.
Yeah. First three rounds. I got a cut on my finger, from the slicing my shit.
Round three is commenced.
Round three commenced.
I did that because I put in a dip and I didn't have a spitter.
Ooh.
So I went, it was, right here. I fucking pushed that thing in, pushed the can down so I could spit into it, and my finger got caught. And the wort, oh, dude, I'm literally cringing right now. Instead of, like, to pull it out, I tried to, like, twist it.
No.
And, dude, it just sliced the shit out of my thumb.
Well, you saw my fingers, right? You saw my fingers on...
dude, I'm battling with it. This is from a cheese grater. this right here is from cleaning dishes in college when I broke a fucking glass. I'm a mess.
Yeah, I got plenty of scars on me too. Just from being reckless, frankly. It's like, you know, slamming weights around, pinch a finger.
Yeah.
Slam a door here or there, drop some shit you're not supposed to drop. Whatever the case may be. But hey, you know, I'd like to propose a toast right before we sign off here. Watch a little Hard Knocks.
Sure.
Here's to feeling good all the time.
All the time.
All the time.
There's no fear missing out tonight.
No fear. Not a one. And with that, folks, we will wrap up here. Coming live from the living room, we got James Perro and Mr. Kyle Crawford.
Well, it's live from the 9-5.
Live from... Oh, that's good.
You like that?
Coming live from the 9-5. 9-5. Let's go. So we'll see you in about a week here. Again, coming live from the 9-5.
Sponsored by Genesee.
Sponsored by Genesee Light and anti-sponsored by Michelob Ultra.
And with that being said, we got to take out the trash.
Because
it's Wednesday night.
We out. See ya.